Hey, good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics. I am Paul Panisco, and as always, thank you for taking time to sit and listen to me jaw with folks that are important to Montana Tech Athletics, and none more so than this week's guest. Athletic Director Matt Steppen is sitting in the chair across from me. We have a lot on the agenda. It has been an incredibly busy fall. We're getting ready and already underway into a very incredibly busy winter. But we have some things we need to talk about. We need to talk about the playoff picture for volleyball, for football. We need to talk about conference season for basketball. And we need to, kind of celebrate all of our tremendous programs from top to bottom. And we're going to talk about our Dig Deep event. It's a championship rally coming up this Friday at the Butte Depot. Matt Steppen is going to give you the details on that, how you can join us, and how you can be a part of Digger Athletics. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, again, thanks for joining us. This is Athletic Director Matt Steppen. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Athletic Director Matt Steppen, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Paul. How you doing?
I'm good. This feels odd because we have sat down to do this once previously, and it probably says a whole lot about the way you and I operate. We paused it to come back and finish it at a later date, and that was like months ago.
Yeah, and I if I remember right, I think there was some technical difficulties where we would have had to go back and probably start over.
Yep,
and yep. And we just said let's pause for now and then let's dive back in and blink your eyes and here we are. That was months ago.
Months ago. How many times do you think you have asked to be on the podcast since then?
I don't know that I've ever made any kind of request to be on the podcast.
Yeah, true. More of it has been, maybe one day I'll be on the podcast.
The fact that I'm the last one in Silverbrook County, no, I'm just kidding. The amount of times we've talked about it and for having offices next to each other and our inability to line up schedules in a manner that allowed us to sit and do that, which really we should just put a headset on because, some of our more productive work is when we have the opportunity to sit and brainstorm. And
yes.
If we were recording that, maybe it's interesting, maybe it's not, but
most of that is over food and I'm not sure people want to hear us eating while we're talking.
Well, maybe not, but I think they'd love to hear a fat guy's perspective on different foods because if not, they reach out to Richard Simmons for exercise advice. Why not reach out to someone who obviously enjoys food a whole lot?
I think we have a new podcast idea, Fat Guy's Perspective.
I like it. I think along with our TikTok group that we're planning. To be announced at a later date.
I just so you know, I did bring it up to our management, aka Shannon.
Okay.
She is very hard no against it. So that of course makes me want to do it even more.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. And again, that'll come up later. But let's actually get the train on the tracks and move forward. We talk every day. We're digging into stuff and so I appreciate us actually being able to sit down and do it, and we'll put it out to the world.
Well, maybe it took us a federal holiday, that campus is quiet.
Yep.
It's Veterans Day.
Mm-hmm.
Big shout out to all of our, former and current active members, active military, first responders, everybody that does the real hard work to make sure that we can enjoy things like this.
Yeah, so we can sit here and talk and drink coffee, for goodness sake.
Correct.
Yeah. Feel pretty small on a day like today. So that said, thank you. And honestly, this week is another real busy week on campus. We have a ton of stuff going on. This month has been kind of nuts, but pretty wonderful in so many ways. But coming up at the end of the week, we have our special event in Dig Deep, and that feels like kind of the jumping off point. It's just a couple days away, something new and just a way to get people together and celebrate and rally around all of our athletics to this point.
Yeah, pretty excited about it. And this is something that, that just kind of came about through reflecting on a lot of the awesome stuff that we've been, you know, we've had a front row seat to, not just this fall, but in the last couple of years, really. Yeah. And have we taken the time at any point just to kind of pause and get people together and share in the excitement and build off the momentum, celebrate some of the great things that our student athletes have done and our coaches have accomplished. And it just felt like there's an audience that was asking for it, to be quite frank. The support we've seen throughout our sports has been incredible. Next week, you know, this week now, you know, just felt like a good time where, you know, we're in the middle of an incredible run from our football team. Our basketball teams have started off undefeated.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of excitement generated around that. We just came off cross country championships where our women finished second. We had our first men's champion in school history. And then, and our golf teams are kind of on a pause, you know, with that split schedule. But I had the opportunity to travel with them to their first tournament this year that had, you know, champions on both the men's and women's side, team championships. And they seem to reset the standards each time they go out, particularly on the women's side right now. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, we've got a national qualifier for indoor track. And it's not even cold enough to go inside yet. And so it's, you know, it's pretty fun, if it might be the best way to say it. Just sit back and watch it all happen, right? Yeah. And watch the success.
Well,
and you know, not to leave out volleyball, that in the newly expanded Frontier Conference, where, you know, you got to qualify just to get in the tournament, they've secured their qualifying spot, a number four seed in an extremely competitive conference. It's got two teams in the top 10, including the number one team in the country.
Yep.
And so pretty fun.
Yeah. And it, you know, at times for your schedule, in the 23 and a half hours you're in your office every day or, you know, wandering around the hallways anyway, it's hard to actually be able to enjoy that stuff a lot. You know, there's so much planning and so much day-to-day work to make sure that football games are going, volleyball's on the road. I mean, to line up all those pieces. So the idea of being able to actually sit back and lift a glass and celebrate and, you know, give them a pat on the back is at times kind of difficult. So Friday's going to be a lot of fun in that respect.
It is. And, you know, I'll say that our coaches do such an outstanding job of managing their programs that they, and you know this, we get to, you know, our hand in planning home games is making sure we get enough people to work the event and that we've got our guests lined up that we plan to celebrate, you know, as far as travel planning and those types of things, our coaches are nails when it comes to that kind of stuff. Nobody knows it better than them. And the way that they manage that is pretty incredible. But you're right. It's, you know, we often don't, you know, sit back and reflect on what's happening while you're in the middle of it.
Yep.
And, you know, there's been some things that we've done over the last couple of years that have never been done here, right? I think
the word historic is getting thrown around a lot lately.
I think that every team that we have has seen its highest ranking in school history within the last 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's not a quote. You know, you can check that. But I believe that to be true.
Yeah.
And when do you sit back and say, all right, let's just take a breath here. And that breath is short. I mean, we'll do this event Friday at the Depot. Doors open at 6. We'll start drawing balls, and we'll get into the details on that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, we'll have some cash prizes we'll hand out. Then we'll hustle up here to start setting up tailgate for Saturday.
That's right? It.
In the middle of that, we've got a basketball game Friday at 5 o'clock with mm-hmm. our men hosting Northwest University. So when we say pause, it's a brief pause, but, an important one.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. It's, you know, it is interesting that the different perspectives that I've been able to be around from, you know, calling games forever And then being part of it, it feels like there are ways that we could celebrate it a little bit more from the inside, but the timing is hard, you know, and to be able to, you know, give everybody a pat on the back and really focus a spotlight on everyone. Like I say, I mean, you look at the program success from top to bottom over the last 5 years is absolutely unprecedented. And you look where, like you say, with volleyball, the Frontier Conference Volleyball Tournament coming up this week, for my money, we knew that was going to be the absolute gauntlet. I mean, as far as any sport, when we combine, you know, the what remained of the DAC schools joining the Frontier Conference, that was the one that was going to be to bring the most muscle, so to speak, you know, to be able to sit at the top of the pile in now the new Frontier Volleyball Tournament. Is saying something because you're going to be sitting on top of the national, and we see that right now with the University of Providence as the number one team in the country. This is going to be a big weekend for the ladies, and then obviously you get into football, we get into basketball. There's so much good that is going on from top to bottom, so it's fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's and you're right. You know, you've got Providence sitting at number one in volleyball. You've got Bellevue, you know, sitting at like number five.
Yeah,
so you know they're right in that, and so. Yeah, to an absolute gauntlet. Be excited to go watch our women play at 2:30 on Thursday.
It's indeed.
And so, I'll say this as the four seed coming in, you can never count them out. They're that group, the way they approach each match, and they got some grit and some toughness to them that I'm excited to come to go watch them play.
Agreed. I agree. So let's talk. Let's turn focus from programs to Dig Deep itself. So Dig Deep on Friday night. You mentioned doors open at 6. We'll start drawing balls at 8:00. Give us the details and let's walk through that evening.
Yeah. So the purpose of the event, as we said, is to celebrate what we've done and build off the momentum that's been created. We want to have an event that feels like informal. Reception celebration with an opportunity for the guests to win some cash, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's modeled loosely off of the old brouhaha that they used to do in the fall here that was done before I started working here 11 years ago. But it's an event that people still talk about, and it's, you know, it's a simple event, you know, where you purchase a ticket, and with your ticket a ball goes into the drawing, and then at the end of the night, we'll start drawing balls down to 10. Each of those 10 will walk away with something. Your final three will walk away with the cut of the cash that's generated. And so we'll have the ball draw. In addition to that, we'll have some silent auction that is focused on our programs, mm-hmm. You know, some signed memorabilia, balls, jerseys, those types of things.
Some really good stuff.
It was important to not try and, you know, the Digger auction in the spring is such a critical event, and the amount of support we see from local businesses and supporters that are so generous with their donations, and we didn't want to attempt to recreate something like that. We wanted to focus it on our programs and the great work that they're doing. Yep. So silent auction with some memorabilia, but really just a chance, low programmed. You know, you're not going to come and listen to a bunch of speeches. Our coaches will be on hand to meet the families and supporters and just have a night to celebrate and build on the momentum going into fall postseason play, mm-hmm. and winter sports kicking off their seasons and getting ready for conference, which is coming earlier than it ever has here in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, the Northwestern game for the men is their final non-conference, and then they're done until we get into conference play in, like I say, just a couple weeks.
Yeah, so it's, 6:00 at the Depot. Your ticket gets you in and gets your ball in the drawing. We've got appetizers from Casa Grande's, mm-hmm. and, you know, a cash bar, so should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. And actually, like I say, if you purchase the tickets and a ball to go in the drawing, if you're going to be there in person, it gets you and your significant other or a guest in the door for appetizers, and you get to hang out. And
And if you can't make it, Paul's created a ticket that you can get online. You can purchase with an opportunity to win cash and support that, you know, at a discounted price.
I've never been able to say this before, but this is going to be exciting. You ready? You can look in the show notes for a link to get your tickets to join us, or if you would like to just purchase a ball to go in the drawing.
Yeah, we'll have to. You'll have to educate me on show notes and some of that terminology that
I've heard other people say, and I'm not sure what it means, to be honest. So we'll find out.
Perfect. Awesome.
Well, and that means, you know, we continually talk about the success, but as we, you know, kind of turn the focus beyond Friday, as we mentioned, volleyball tournament gets underway down to Carroll College on Thursday. That tournament gets rolling, single elimination, and you know, the winner of that bad boy. And obviously, the Frontier Conference will have representation of the national tournament anyway. But the winner will get the automatic, and then we have the possibility of at-larges going and hosting or going on the road for those first rounds as well.
Yeah, and I believe that that selection, I want to say, is Monday. For okay. volleyball, and so we'll find out what our future is on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're very optimistic at the opportunity to represent the conference on some level, but we'll have to wait till Monday to know for sure. Unless we go out and win the whole darn thing,
yep.
Then it's just sitting and waiting to find out where we're going or who's coming here. And I believe that takes place on Monday. Football will wrap up its regular season on Saturday with Senior Day here. Football selections will take place Sunday, I believe, at 5 o'clock
yeah.
local time.
I believe it's 5 o'clock Sunday for football, and then Monday, I want to say 4 maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right. We can check on that, though.
Yeah. So, and we'll have those in there as well. We'll put those in the show notes as well, so you can take a look at that and find out information. But, yeah, we'll find out and get ready for tournament time. Now, you know, again, the volleyball tournament itself is, like I say, new format. You had to earn your way to get in. Top eight from the conference will go. It's single elimination. Find out who the winner is come Saturday night, and they'll get the automatic bid and then, you know, the possibility of moving on from there. As you mentioned, football, it's Senior Day here. Final regular season game at Bob Greenfield at Alumni. And looking forward to that is Valley City coming to town on Saturday.
Yeah, I believe it's the first time we've played Valley City.
Yes, indeed.
So a lot of firsts this year. I'm excited to welcome Valley City, who's having a great year. I think they're 6-3 mm-hmm. coming in. And so looking forward to honoring our seniors on Saturday and what has been an incredible season by Coach Sampson and staff this year. 10-0 right now. First time of we've ever been in this position at this time of the year, being undefeated. I think 5-0 was the first time for us this year. So each week we've just kind of extended that, and
bar keeps going up.
Yeah, the bar keeps going up, and we're pretty excited to end the regular season and then learn our playoff positioning on Sunday.
Yeah. I believe, you know, we continue to talk about firsts, but I believe the longest win streak in football history is 11 straight games. That was 2015 or 16.
Yeah,
it was,
I want to say 2015.
15, I believe. Lost the opener, and it was just bookended. Lost the first, and then lost in the second round of the playoffs.
As I sit here, I believe 2016 was the year.
Was it?
I want to say in 2015... we had a similar number of wins, but had a loss to Eastern Oregon, you know, partway through the season.
Okay.
But I think we lost Copper Game in 2016 and then didn't lose again until Reinhardt in the second round out in Georgia.
Yep, that is the exact situation.
All right.
Look at you go. Big brain on Matt.
Year two here for me that year.
Okay. Gosh, that was an interesting year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this year just continually the you keep looking to this team and what they present, they're awfully tough. I mean, they're incredibly fun to watch on both sides of the ball.
They sure are. We've really seen the depth of the team here over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Saw a lot of different faces and not a lot of drop off in production, you know, but I think that it's true. You know, we all know that the season started off with about as tough a schedule as you can put together. And amongst the toughest schedules in the NAI, and we have continued to improve on that start. We're a much better team now than we have than we were even early in the year with some signature wins,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's knocking on some wood here, but as we approach the end of the season and when we talk about postseason and potential, you know, I think we're comfortable in saying that we're going to be playing in the postseason regardless of what, I mean, I'm not looking ahead here, regardless of what happens on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have an opportunity to represent the conference in the postseason. Where, when, and against who, all to be determined, I think, you know, still by these final weeks. It's a little bit different this year than it has been in the past, how that selection process is done.
And I was going to ask you to walk us through it. So, I mean, if you don't mind kind of giving us an idea about that, because I think, like a whole lot of things, there's a whole lot of misinformation. There's, you know, things that we have grown up being used to, and the main one for me is the idea of the top 25 list. You know, the coaches list we've always looked at every level, from Division I to the NAIA, we've always looked at that as almost kind of scripture. You know, you're yeah. like, if you're in the top four, you're golden. But now that coaches poll is nothing other than for people to argue
about. It's a fan poll. And you're right. We used to be able to say, all right, here's the final top 25. Here's the 13, 12 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
12 auto bids, now 13. That leaves, you know, four back when it was 16,
yep,
and 12 autos. Now, since it's 13 autos, they've expanded the field to 20. So we just a year ago, we could say, all right, here's the 13 that are in. And so you could start at the top of that top 25 list, which was a primary criterion selection,
yep.
which is an important part of this rambling story. But you could start at the top, and the first non-auto was the first at large.
Yep.
And so you could pretty much count it down. Even I can count seven, and figure out who those seven likely at larges. And if you fell below those seven, you know, you were out. And that might be, you might be a number 16, 15, 16 team in the coaches poll, but not make the top 20
mm-hmm.
because you had a handful of auto bids from conferences. Every conference gets an auto bid.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a handful of auto bids from teams that were not in the top 25, right? And so you might be 15, 16 and not make the final 20.
Yeah.
And so completely different now. First, from a conference perspective, rather than one auto bid, we have two through the expansion. So because we have more than 12 or more schools playing football, we get two auto bids. The only way, per the NAIA, the only way we can have multiple auto bids is by splitting into divisions and having one auto bid per division. So a lot of questions about why we have an East-West division. And the obvious perception is to attempt to regionalize, you know, the best that we can, because we span from, you know, East South Dakota to, you know, the West Coast,
yep,
and down to Arizona, and that's true. So regionalizing through divisional play was important, but the truth is we have to have two divisions in order to have two auto bids. And so that's the decision we made as a conference. And so we'll have the East Division champion will have an auto bid. We've secured that. And that's why we can be confident in saying that we're in the postseason, regardless of what happens Saturday. We have secured at least a share of the Eastern Division and hold the tiebreaker over any potential teams that could be tied with us.
Yes.
Similar in the West.
Yep.
College of Idaho has earned that spot. And at least a share of the Western Division title.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will be the two representatives in auto bids. Where it's changed so much is how those remaining seven are now selected. As you mentioned, a primary criteria once was coaches poll, and that was only one of a number of primary criteria, but that's not a criteria, primary or secondary at all now.
Okay.
There, some of the similar primary criteria that have been around is where you sit in your arc, right? And your arc is the area ratings committee. And so it takes the entire NAIA, it breaks it up into four areas, and then you compare the schools in each of those four areas,
okay,
right? So a collection of coaches selected by the conferences represent the area ratings committee for that area.
So you have west, east, north, south kind of thing, or is it a little bit different than that?
More or less, okay. Yeah. I think we're in the west arc, western arc. And it includes the Frontier Conference and the Sooner, okay, Conference. So prior to our conference expansion, it included the Frontier, the North Star, and the Sooner. So essentially the same schools that make up our ARC previously make it up now. There's just one less conference. Mm-hmm. So our teams, our Raiders, rank our schools between those two conferences in an order that the selection committee may use as a primary criteria when they're selecting at large.
Okay.
It's not a good comparison, our arc versus another arc necessarily, but it's a starting point for when they're choosing at large selections, you know, and they're looking to our area, which order does our area feel they should be in?
Yes.
And they'll basically start at the top and, you know, take out the auto bids and start at the top. And, you know, those will be the first school selected out of our area.
Do they do those from one to however many we have, or do they do like one to 15 or one to 10 to 20? Is there anything like that? Or
it's a good question. They do not rank everybody.
Okay.
But I can't honestly sit and tell you that I remember
what the line is.
Yeah. How many, and it's important because if you don't win your conference and you are not, in your ARC rating, you're not eligible for selection.
Okay.
Right. And so, you know, where you sit in that ARC is important.
It almost comes down to the people that people on the ARC committee, they're the ones that almost say these eight teams we feel, for example, I'm not saying that there's any line, but just they almost rate to a point where they're like, that's kind of where the real good teams end. Or?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, just there's 20 teams that make the playoffs. There's four arcs. So logic tells you that you better be in the top five of your arc to have a shot. It does not mean that they take five schools from mm-hmm. each arc, right? Some arcs are going to get more. Some are going to get less. And, you know, your area ratings committee and the coaches that make it up are going to do whatever they can, along with your representative on the selection committee, to make the case to promote your conference to the best they can. But their job is to accurately rate the schools within that area. Yep. And so that's one primary criteria. Your win-loss record obviously is a primary criteria. And that makes, you know, that's self-explanatory mm-hmm. why that is. And that's been true in the past as well. There are a couple different new primary criteria. One is the Massey rating. So a statistician, I think he's a college professor, Ken Massey, has come up with a formula, not just for football, but a number of sports, that takes into account your strength of schedule, your production in game. And so point differential mm-hmm. to a certain cap. Right. You know, how you're actually playing on the field against other opponents in the Massey rating, your record, all of those things, and then boils it down to a number.
Okay.
And that it ranks you compared to other schools that you otherwise may or may not have the opportunity to play against. That's a primary criteria being used in football. And then something brand new is what's called the Football Performance Index, or FPI. So you've seen, if you followed ratings releases at any time over the course of the season, you're seeing a weekly FPI. And FPI is similar to the Massey in that it boils it down to a number, but it's more what drives your Massey number are your results, not necessarily how you played in the game, but the result.
Okay.
And the result of your opponents and your opponents' opponents matters, right? So it's a point system that, you know, generally speaking, you're rewarded for higher competition. You're rewarded for wins on the road versus home. And so, for example, if you win on the road against a team with a 900 win percentage or better, you get 38 points. To beat that same team at home, you get 36 points. To beat a team that with like a 500 win percentage might be 32 points on the road and 30 points at home and so on and so forth, right? Yeah. And what's interesting about that is it's not – you don't get points based on their record that week. For example, it's updated weekly and all your past games are updated weekly, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? So
yep.
you could beat the, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, a team week one, or let's say in through the first 3 weeks, a team could start off really poorly, that maybe they start 0-3, but if they win, so in that respect, you're only going to get like 20 points, if that, over a win over that team mm-hmm. At the beginning of the year. But at the end of the year, if they're 8-3, that changes drastically the number of points you're going to get yeah. at the end of the year.
That 20 points could have turned into, you know, could result in 28 points. And so it's calculated by week, and then your total number is divided by the number of games you've played, and that gets you your index number. And so that is a new primary criteria that's being used by the NAI as a way to reward schools, I think, for wins against quality opponents on the road versus at home and so on and so forth. It's a little bit, you know, as we've followed it and in an attempt to try and understand it better, I've done my own. And as you get later in the year and you're playing divisional games, it's interesting because your division at that point, when you're playing divisional games, your division goes 500 every week, right? There's, you know, in our division, we've got seven schools. So there's three games a week, three winners, three losers.
Yep.
Right. And so, but so that makes it sound like it's a wash. Well, it's really not, because you have cross divisional games, you have non-conference games, all those things,
home and away,
you know, matter into the calculation. And where this the changes really happen are when a school goes from, say, a 667 win percentage, right, to a 700 with a win. It's that 0.1 difference that changes the point structure, yeah. right? Yeah. And so, you know, there's certain number of points, but if they're between 500 and 600 win percentage, it's the same. But as they cross a new threshold, the points change, right? Yeah. And so not only for us, but for everybody else in the calculation, mm-hmm. right? And so it becomes not only hard to track, but really hard to predict, right? You can look at, I think right now we sit third in the FPI. We've been in the top three, I believe, in the FPI all year long.
Mm-hmm.
Been one more than we've been not number one.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you get into this last week and you see, okay, Grandview is number one, Friends is number two, who do they play? That matters. But everybody that they played, who do they play? Yep. And, it, you know, it gets really hard to chase predictions, and you just got to kind of wait and see not only what the results are, but how those results are used in seeding and selection, I think, is what we don't know, right? And just on a call with our football committee this morning, Chris Stutzer, I'm from Rocky Mountain College, is our representative. He's on the National Selection Committee, and he can tell you that in the past, you know, they look at all these metrics And when they feel like there's two teams that, you know, have the same metrics and they can't really determine one over the other, they're in different conferences, they didn't play, you could look to the coaches poll and say, well, one's 12 in the coaches poll and one's 24. So it made a lot of sense to put the number 12 team in. Now that that is not being used at all.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to predict where, you know, they make sure I don't screw this up, but the objective criteria, right? The Massey, the ARC, the FPI crosses with the subjective, right? The eye test is the, as they say.
Yeah.
And where things fall when that's done.
Is there any, does any one of those three hold more weight than the others? Or
that's a great question.
Is there something that they start with? Okay.
No. Right. And so those primary criteria, and there's secondary criteria too. So you go through the primary criteria, the FPI, the Massey, win-loss record. Not any one of those holds more water than the other.
Okay.
Right? They're all primary criteria to be considered. You know, as opposed to first criteria is ARC. Well, you've got the number one from the West, the number one from the North, and how do you, so then you can go to the next criteria. No, that's not. They're all primary criteria, none which that all are a piece of the puzzle that they're trying to put together.
It's a pretty comprehensive net with those three, because if you're looking at a team that is 7-3, you know, you or whatever the case is, looking to get into the playoffs or trying to figure out where you lie, when you start to go, okay, well, there are these amount of teams that are above with two losses or one loss or no loss, that you start to fall through those nets pretty quickly. Those losses are going to be less as far as your FPI. The Massey, obviously, you're going to fall with losses. So though they all come together pretty easy to paint a picture once you see those first three.
So, yes and no.
Okay.
So your FPI, a loss hurts you in the FPI compared to a win. There's no question. The Massey's different. The Massey measures your quality in each game. So let's say that you play a high quality team that's above you in the Massey.
Okay.
And you play them really competitively, but lose a close game. You may go up in the Massey.
Okay.
Right. You will not go up in the FPI. If that makes sense.
Yep.
Right. And so I think in the Massey, we sit fourth right now. And just behind us is Morningside with two losses, right? And a number of undefeated teams below them.
Okay.
And so the Massey rewards the performance on the field as opposed to the FPI rewards the outcome of the game.
Yeah. Just straight up wins, losses.
Yeah. That might be the best way that I can explain it. So how the selection committee sits in a room on Sunday and says, okay, you know, where they start, I don't know. Do they start with, let's start with the undefeated teams and then compare FPI and Massey rating? Or do you start with one of those primary, you know, FPI or Massey? You know, I don't know. I don't know that. What I do know is that the first thing that they do is they set the field of 20.
Okay.
Right. So the morning will start with that group sitting and trying to get the 20 best teams.
Do they do it in person? Do they do it over Zoom?
They do it over Zoom.
Okay.
There's been, I was watching an NAI ADA. Actually, no, it was a Victory Sports Network interview of Jesse Gotting, Dr. Gotting, who is the vice president for athletics at Nelson University, formerly SAGU.
Yep.
We went down there a few years ago.
They were incredibly good.
I served with Jesse on the NAI ADA.
Okay.
Got a ton of respect for Jesse, and he was being interviewed by Jason Danley with Victory Sports Network. Mm-hmm. And that question was asked of him. And it's not, it's over Zoom or Teams or however they want to do it. There's been some conversation about, and some sports I believe they do. And if you at the NCAA level, the Division I level, that all happens within a room. There's value to being in a room, and across from a committee member, and sharing ideas and all those things.
But we continually talk about NAIA is the idea of saving money and figuring out I mean, there's a lot to be said for both sides of that.
You got to strike a balance.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so that, and there's coaches that are a part of this process, and they may be playing in a game on Saturday. They will be playing in a game on Saturday if they're coaching. And then to expect that they'll be in Kansas City or wherever they choose to do it on Sunday is just not reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And that coach might have a lot going on. It might be, you know, they might be preparing for a playoff game that maybe they're the auto bid. And so it'd be unfair to ask them to travel and sit in a room. It's important. And I think everybody understands the value in doing it. But you got to strike that balance.
Yeah.
It's just not reasonable.
Have you ever sat on that committee previously?
I have not. I've not been involved in a selection committee. They put a call out, the NAIA did this year, of those that are interested in serving on those types of committees. And not because there was an opening, but because they want to build a list that they can go to quickly in the case that, you know, a committee member has to step away or takes another job or whatever. And I did, I you know, threw my hat in the ring, and we'll see if I get a phone call one day, but it's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I have served on some committees that, you know, for back in the early on, you know, the football postseason reimbursement. I wasn't actually on that committee, but, involved in building the legislation that drastically changed the reimbursement model for football postseason. And it was a critically important one where, you know, schools previously were on the hook for all postseason expenses, including charter flights that are hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Especially that first weekend of, you know, trying to get a flight Thanksgiving weekend is real easy.
Yeah, I still got recurring nightmares of the first years that we were tackling that, me and Chuck Morrell, and he's trying to get ready for a playoff game, and we're trying to secure a plane, look at every absolute every opportunity to travel, and you know, whether that's a bus or commercial or charter, and you're going out to Indiana, right? And so you compile all the information you can. I remember sitting in Don Blackadder's office going, okay, here with Chuck saying, all right, here's our options. You know, we can bus and leave on Tuesday and probably have no chance to win the game if that's what we got to do, right? You can't fly commercial with 60-something, you know, players, a party of 70-plus on a week's notice on Thanksgiving week, right? It's just not – it's not possible.
Yeah.
Not even not feasible. It's not possible.
Not possible.
And chartering is really expensive, right? And fortunately, as an institution at that time, we were in a position running surpluses with enrollment where we were at that, you know, after very careful consideration, we got the support we needed to charter. And that's our only shot at winning the game, right? And so we recognize that there are institutions, and I put us in that category in some years between that year and this year. I don't know what that, you know, how that conversation would go now, you know, but there certainly were some years in the last 10 where, you know, you're battling enrollment, you're recovering from financially from the pandemic, all those things that where schools would probably have to decline the opportunity because it's not a reasonable way to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars, right? And totally understand that.
Yes.
I believe that myself. And so we recognized that the NAI was going down a path that if schools have to start declining those opportunities, it would have a damning effect on what you're trying to do with the student experience. Yeah. So was involved in some of the early drafting of that legislation and educating the NAI to come up with the current model that it's basically an insurance model that all NAI's football playing schools pay into. Your premium is based on how frequently you've made the postseason in the last, say, 5 years. So, you know, the most, if you make the playoffs consistently, you're going to pay a higher premium, which, you know, It's not inexpensive. You know, I want to say $12,000 to $14,000. And if you haven't made the playoffs in the last 5 years, it might be $2,000, yeah. Right? And $14,000 is not a any small amount of number from any of our budgets. But by paying into that, there's a, you know, what you'd call a deductible amount, mm-hmm. you know, that if we had to travel, we pay the first, I think in the past, it's been the first $10,000, and then that playoff reimbursement picks up the rest, right? So now you're talking, you know, somewhere around $20,000 for postseason travel compared to $200,000 yeah. that a school was saddled with before, yeah. right? And so, yeah. Anyway, it was involved in that. I was on the committee that looked at recommending whether to expand the postseason football number from 16 to 20, which we did recommend, and it was adopted by the NAI. I think this is our third year
mm-hmm.
of the expanded playoff field. And so I was on that committee, but have not been involved in any of the selections.
Okay. So they obviously, I'm going to say get in a room, but they're not, they're in a Zoom call, whatever the case is. But the first step is to get us to 20. They take the 13 automatic bids, which obviously go on the table real easy. And then they start with those criteria to get the remaining seven in. Is that
correct?
Okay.
Yep. And they, and that's where the debate starts. That's when the metrics come in. That's when all those things to select those seven. And now you have your, once that's done, you have your 20. It's not until you have that 20 that they even talk about seeding. So yeah. Now we have 20. So now let's seed them, you know, your top 12, get a bye. 13 through 20 play that first round to get you to do a 16-team tournament with 13, 14, 15, and 16 hosting 17, 18, 19, and 20.
Yeah.
And it's not a true seeding model where, you know, 13 plays 20 and so on and so forth. And when you get to 16, it's not necessarily one plays 16. And, you know, the seeding can fluctuate, you know, the committee can move schools up or down, I think, three seeds to help maybe regionalize matchups.
Yep.
And to maybe regionalize matchups isn't the right way to phrase it, but help reduce the number of flights needed to have postseason.
Yeah.
Right. So that they can make sure that the cost of it, there's enough money in the playoff reimbursement pool to cover the expenses. Right. If you went true seeding model and you had four flights in the first round and then additional flights and following rounds, your costs would be more than what you have in the pool, or could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to balance that as well when they're making their selections week by week. So even if you know who you play in round one, you don't necessarily know who you play next round yeah. if you win.
Yeah, the bracket isn't true in that respect. Correct. Where lines connect and there's yeah. there's going to be a lot of movement just for saving money. I mean, when it boils right down to it, is to make sure that they can get it done and save some money.
Yeah.
When are the conference rules brought in? I mean, the idea of there used to be a line of, you know, you don't want conference opponents to play each other in the first round. Is that right?
There's never been a policy.
Okay.
But
unspoken kind of thing.
There's been a best practice that the NAI does whatever they can to avoid matching conference opponents up in the first round.
Okay. So in our first round now would be those, like the 13 down is when they would try and not to have opponents play or conference opponents play?
Yeah, I think that's correct. It used to be that they, in the round of 16, they kept conference opponents separated. And then once you get into that, you know, that round of eight, it which is your quarterfinal round, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That wasn't protected anymore. That's been one of the, I don't want to say downside. I think the move to go to 20 was the right move. Especially, I think the NAI at the time was going from 12 auto bids to 13 because the KCAC added a couple schools and got two bids.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was reducing the amount of at-larges from 4 to 3. And that, you know, just felt like that wasn't providing enough postseason access to quality schools, that the move to 20 was the right one. The move to 20, there's a lot of conversation about the financial impact of that, adding around to it, right? And how do you mitigate that, whether it's through host fees or increasing the amount that each school has to pay, you know, that deductible.
Yeah.
Deductible amount from, say, 10,000 to 20,000. They still seem to hold that the first round, they protect conference matchups, but that the second round, they may not, which is the round of 16, which is the round that used to be protected, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So I think it's happened. I think it happened just a couple of years ago that Western had a bye.
Yeah.
I can't remember if College of Idaho did as well, or if they had to play an opponent to, and I want to say maybe they played Ottawa and hosted Ottawa, beat Ottawa, and then they matched them up with Western in second round, that round of 16.
Okay.
I think that's true. I can't say that for sure, but I believe that they matched conference opponents up in that round of 16.
Okay.
And I mean, there's different ways to look at it. One is, my own opinion is that we'd like to be separated for as long as Frontier schools can be separated, because I think the competition and the quality in the Frontier is really good. And I think you can see multiple teams make good runs in the postseason. And so by pairing them up, you're eliminating one.
Mm-hmm.
The other way to look at it is by pairing them up, you're guaranteeing someone's moving on mm-hmm. within the Frontier. Right. And so,
and the one thing we've always talked about, even, you know, we'll age ourselves, that idea of the old Frontier. We're on an island, you know, with the teams in the West. Whereas if you're in the Midwest, you can hop on a bus and go play. What's the range as far as when they make the, you know, they suggest bus as opposed to flying?
I think it's 800 miles.
800 miles?
I think anything longer than 800 miles is considered a flight.
And I would have to think you can put a stylus down in the Midwest, 800 on most of those schools, and you can play a whole lot of those games against different opponents outside your conference in the Midwest, where we just don't have that as a luxury.
We have conference opponents that are outside 800 miles.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and there's, I think there's exceptions to that. Last year was one where we were seated and where Northwestern was seated. We both had byes. The NAI could match us up in a way that made sense. And with both of us having a bye, they could let us know well in advance that the game was going to happen so that Northwest could bus and save the flight cost,
mm-hmm.
even though they were probably outside that 800 miles or real close to it.
Yeah.
But they had the luxury of saying, where we wouldn't have in 2015 or 2016, you know, 2015 when we went to St. Francis, Indiana, you know, we didn't know who we were playing until the Sunday before.
Yeah.
And just didn't make it reasonable, right? So I believe Northwestern bust here last year because the NAI was able to let us both know well in advance that this is the matchup that's going to be, I think, even before the first round games were played.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your insight into that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we help people. Do you think we help someone or not?
You know, if you ask, I get asked this, right? You know, where do you think we'll be seated? You know, where do we think we'll be seated if we win Saturday, if we lose Saturday? You know, buys, host, you know, how far could we potentially host? And I don't know. I just don't. I mean, I think that what makes it so challenging this year is the new metrics and how the committee chooses to use them, right? Mm-hmm. I think that we could make a really strong case for us to be anywhere between 1 and 4 if we went out. But you just don't know if how we perceive the process to play out is the way that it actually plays out, right? And we got to win on Saturday, mm-hmm. right? We got to win on Saturday. Yep. That's one of the missions that the team set out for early in the year. And so that's the next step before we even get into postseason and all those things. And, you know, I'm really proud of the way that they've approached this, you know, knowing early in the year, halfway through the year, we went through a gauntlet of a schedule. Yeah. And you know, approaching each week like it's a playoff game. And I heard Coach Sampson talk about this 4 weeks ago, right? That they've got goals, and those, and they're not afraid to talk about those goals going all the way to the national championship.
Yep.
And, you know, 4 weeks ago, he's talking about ramping up their preparation now so that when the opportunity comes, if the opportunity comes for postseason, they don't feel like they got to up their game because it's postseason, and trying to reset each week, you know, to focus the team on the next game has been pretty fun to watch and pretty inspiring, in particular over the last week or so, you know, that there's been some unique challenges to the program over the last week. And, you know, we continue to think about and pray for the Klimple family and Kellen and as he fights his battle bravely and with such incredible strength.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's shown and that the family has shown.
Yeah.
I know that we're all continued to be inspired by the updates that we're getting. But I just can't even, don't know how to articulate how, impressed isn't the right word, but the amount of care and concern that that family has shown for us and our program, I don't know how to articulate how inspiring that is, right? With what they're going through and the care and concern they have for us, who obviously, you know, we've got some people that are really hurting right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was articulated in a team meeting by a young gentleman, you know, who's a family member of Kellen in the room, that Kellen was here when we set our goals. Maybe the best thing that we can do for Kellen is to work towards those goals in honor of Kellen, right? And so, you know, we're coaches in constant communication with the family. I've had the opportunity to speak with family members throughout the last week, and, you know, we just continue to think and pray for Kellen and the family and for strength and for healing. And, you know, just so overcome with emotion with how they've handled everything and the love and concern they've showed for us, which just seems, you know,
You don't want to say
incredible.
Yeah, exactly. It just, being able to think of others in that scenario is beyond me.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's, it's certainly head down and go, you know, I mean, the way they have continued to rally, the way they have come together, the way they have made every step as a unit, I think is incredibly admirable. And
it brings a whole lot of pride to my heart watching the way that's been managed.
Yeah,
there's no manual and there's no page in the manual that tells you how to go about something like that, right? But being there and being in the room as these conversations are happening with the staff and then with the team and with our administration, who's been lockstep with us. We met with the team on Sunday afternoon, you know, the day after the accident, and you know, Dr. McLean was right there with us, right? I'll say this. I am so very grateful that we have a head coach and a staff, and I believe this to be true across all of our programs, that day after day prioritize the individuals and not the results. Mm-hmm. And when you're faced with something like this, you're just so very grateful that culture is baked into what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to having to come up with or manufacture that culture that helps you get through it. Because it's baked in, we get to navigate it together, all, you know, without knowing the right thing to do, without, we can have honest conversations about what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, you know, and the culture is there for the student to speak up and say, this doesn't feel right. And I'm just very grateful to have people leading our programs mm-hmm. that understand that as a priority, it just makes things easy. Is not the right word, because there's been nothing easy about the last week, but you can feel confident that the decisions that are being made and the conversations being had are with keeping the right things top of mind.
Yeah. Well, and I'll take it one step further, and that all starts with you. It goes to the top of the food chain. You know, I mean, you get all the garbage. I mean, you take the emails and the calls, but there is also the other side of that where, all of this starts with you. So, take solace in knowing that, yeah, everybody follows in your footsteps, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. I just, you know, I say it time and time again. I'll say it to him, boom, in the face. I'm the luckiest person that I know. I get to work in sports for my alma mater in my hometown, and I get to do it with people that I truly enjoy working with every day, present company included.
Oh, right? That hurt,
and
didn't
so,
it?
But honestly, I mean, very few, I think, get to just get out of bed and look forward to going and work with the people that you work with every day.
Yeah.
In our building and outside of our building. And, you know, certainly, it's not lost on me how fortunate I am to be able to do that.
Let's get ready to get out of here. Give us the details again on Friday. We've got Dig Deep on Friday. We'll wrap it up with that, and then we'll set you free, brother.
Yeah. So Dig Deep. It's our first annual. We'll see. I guess annual.
Oh, Bruce Saylor's going to kill you for that.
First annual.
First annual.
Yeah, I know. As I said it, I took pause, but you know. It's
first of many,
the first of its of in our era of this type of event. Again, it's just a celebration and a way to get together and you know, talk with coaches and talk with our families and celebrate a lot of great and exciting things that are happening around here. Build on our momentum that going into fall postseason across all of our sports and diving headfirst into our winter sports. That are off to a great start. It's just an opportunity to share an Ore Digger Fellowship, support the programs through the purchase of a ticket and silent auction, and an opportunity to walk away with some cash. So I really think it's going to be a fun event that people will look forward to attending for years to come.
You can find out more information at godiggers.com, and also, again, we'll put it in the show notes. And if you have any questions or anything, just pick up the phone and give us a call. I mean, that's all there is to it is that will be down to the depot this Friday. Okay.
Matt Doors Stepan. Open at 6, ball draws at 8.
There you go. Anything else? Did we miss anything?
Probably.
I assume we missed hundreds of things, but that's all right.
As per the usual, we just get, you know, we get into a great conversation, and, you know, when you get to work with great people and around some super inspiring student athletes, you know,
that's
it's pretty fun to talk about them.
It is.
And the things that they're accomplishing.
Well, Matt Stepan, two-time reigning athletic director of the year. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
My thanks to Athletic Director Matt Stepan for making the long, arduous journey from his office, which is approximately 18, maybe 20 feet away from mine, to sit and record our latest episode of Roll Digs. But I don't know. Joking aside, none of this gets done without Matt. He's an incredible athletic director, and we are extremely lucky to have him, not only here at Montana Tech, but in my opinion, in our community of Butte, Montana. One other thing we need to do, we need to thank the crew at EMATAD, as EMATAD originally had everything kind of set up for this Friday for their senior banquet for our football seniors. They were able to and willing to move that so that we could do our Dig Deep event. So hats off to the crew at EMATAD for joining us and actually, I should say, for giving up their night at the depot, allowing us to make it our night. And, you know, and hats off to them as well, as a lot of them are going to be joining us on Friday. So again, my thanks to Matt Steppen, the crew of Emmetad as well. We'll see you at Dig Deep coming up this Friday. Doors open at 6. We'll start drawing the balls at 8 o'clock. And certainly looking forward to that down to the Butte Depot. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, have a great one. Make sure to, of course, share the podcast. And until next time, take care.